not going to take attendance today. Instead of taking attendance, maybe we'll talk a little bit about Rabbi Tendler before we start shir. I think it's important that when a Rosh Yeshiva in our yeshiva passes away, that we should have an appreciation of who the Rosh Yeshiva was. Many of you probably, Rabbi Tendler was a larger-than-life personality. We have a family member of Rabbi Tendler in the room, but so many of you know a lot about Rabbi Tendler, you know, from the hearing here and there. I think it's kedai, you know, as B'nai Yeshiva, to understand a little bit more and to appreciate his contribution to our yeshiva, his contribution to Klal Yisrael, and the loss. This is not a hesped. I'm not, you know, going to say a hesped, but I attended as Beidim, so I was able to pick up a lot, and I just thought that you might find it meaningful. So I don't take away time from Shir lightly. I don't do that lightly, and I don't view this as batala. I remember when I was in a bachur in the yeshiva, Rav Khan made a huge push that all the guys in the yeshiva should know who our Rashi yeshiva were, who the people were that sort of made this place what it is, and hopefully will continue to inspire going forward. My connection with Rabbi Tendler was a family connection. I only came to the yeshiva when he was obviously at the very, very end of his career. My connection was a family connection in two ways. I have a cousin, a distant cousin, but we're very close, who married Rabbi Tendler's daughter. So Russi Tendler, now Fried, married my cousin Shalom Fried, and that was in 1986. That was many, many years ago. And then they made the shidduch for my brother to marry Rabbi Tendler's granddaughter. So we were connected in the family in two ways. So my brother married Faya. I remember when my brother met Faya, we're like, what kind of name is Faya? And everyone said, so Moshe's mother's name. We're like, oh, okay, we're not, we won't question that anymore. So that was the family connection. Most of my relationship with him was from family simchas, really, that, you know, every time there was a bar mitzvah in California that my brother was making, so obviously he would fly out because he was extremely close with all of his grandchildren. He would never miss a simcha. You know, we generally spoke, like, in relaxed kinds of settings, you know, like in the backyard, and where he's telling the little kids about some, I don't know, the bugs that they're catching, what they are, and what they're like, you know, like all this information that, like, you wonder, like, how it got into his head, and he's describing how, you know, before Pesach, how they're going to make matzahs, and, you know, so it was mostly like a much more relaxed kind of atmosphere. One time my brother did me the tremendous avla of making me speak at the bar mitzvah right after Rabbi Tendler. First speaker is Rabbi Tendler, next speaker is my brother Aryeh. That was not so gishmak. I have to follow. When I took a speech in YU, Dr. Bukas was the speech teacher who used to say, if you want to know how to speak well, I can teach you whatever I'll teach you. And he was a big ball guy, but, like, he really thought that he had, I mean, he did, he had a lot to offer, but he said, I'm talking about the professor now, not Rabbi Tendler. He said, I have a lot to, but if you really want to know how to present, you just listen to Rabbi Tendler, and then you'll know how to present. So he said, and the best advice I can give you, our speech professor used to tell us, is don't speak at an event where you speak after Rabbi Tendler. So I didn't always follow that advice. So I just want to share with you some of the highlights of the Hespedim that were given by, I mean, the Masvidim were tremendous. There were a lot of them. It was 3 hours straight of Hespedim. I don't know how many of you were watching online, from what I understand, not all of them were so easy to hear online. Some of them were easier than others to hear online, but the Masvidim included family members, obviously, all of his sons and sons-in-law, his brother, who lives in California, who's 18 years younger than him, his brother-in-law, Rav Reuven Feinstein, the president of Yeshiva, Rabbi Berman, and Moreno Rav Shachter Shlita. Am I missing someone? Is there someone else that was on? I think... That was everybody. So those were the Masvidim. So I just want to share with you, again, I just put my thoughts together in the last 10 minutes, just that which jumped out in my mind from listening to the Hespedim. One thing that jumped out is how demanding Rabbi Tendler was. And I say this not in a negative of demanding of others only. He was demanding of others, but demanding of himself, tremendously demanding of himself. One of the children, I don't remember which one, described that as a young child, when the Tendlers were still living in the Heights, and Rabbi Tendler was in graduate school in Columbia University, whenever he was doing that, and he was also teaching an MTA, they would come into the kitchen early in the morning, as kids sometimes wake up early, and they run into the kitchen, and they found him asleep at the kitchen table with piles of svarim next to him, meaning he was extremely demanding of himself. There's a kind of hasmada that we don't often find in our generation, where we like to take care of ourselves and make sure that we're, you know, just pushing himself and pushing himself, to the point of exhaustion. My cousin Shalom described how if you were a regular balabas who just went with the program in Rabbi Tendler Shul, you did like 3 hours of text learning on Shabbos just by doing the regular things, because on Friday night after the meal you came back to Shul and there was an hour and a half long Parsha Shir, there was a Mishnah Berurah Shir, there was a She'ilto Shir in middle of davening, so there's no escaping, right? The She'ilto Shir, so I spoke to someone who grew up in the Shul, a friend of mine, Eli Gantro, grew up in community synagogue. I said, what, a She'ilto Shir, like in the middle of davening, like how did that work? He said, well, Rabbi Tendler had a rule. He said, he doesn't remember exactly what time it was, but let's say the Sefer Torah does not come out of the Aron Kodesh until, I don't know, let's say 9:45, right? So if you sped through Shacharis, if they had a quick ball Shacharis, Shil Toshir was just longer. You know, Shil Toshir was between Shacharis and Kriyas HaTorah. And there was no benefit in speeding up davening, because then instead of a 15-minute Shil Toshir, you got a 25-minute Shil Toshir. And just just the amount of... he was in love with Medrash Rabbah, and he attributed that to Rav Soloveitchik. He said when he first started his first shul in Great Neck, he built the first community Erev in the United States. He did a lot of things that were firsts. But he also started the first Orthodox synagogue in Great Neck. And he asked Rav Soloveitchik for advice. He said, I went to Rav Soloveitchik, what bracha do I make on this? I don't know what to do. You know, this was not in the plans to be a community rabbi. And Rav Soloveitchik said that if you want to have good drushas, you never skip. You learn through the Medrash Rabbah in every week's parsha, in every parsha. And he said that he saw from Rav Soloveitchik how to learn a medrash properly. So also that you don't skip Agadah to Gemaras, that you should learn the Agadah to Gemaras also, because that's going to give you all of the material that you need. So he also was demanding of others in the sense that he was demanding of other poskim, meaning it bothered him a lot when poskim didn't do their homework, when people would paskin on shailas when they weren't familiar with the metzius hadvarim. I mean, obviously this was a unique aspect that we don't find with many people. There are certain poskim that are just extremely thorough and intellectually curious and willing and able to study something ad hasof, meaning to really, really, really gain a full understanding of something. There aren't so many that actually do that. Rabbi Belsky, Zecharo Levracha, comes to mind as someone, you know, who's that style posek. Rabbi Rappaport, Rabbi Tandler's son-in-law, comes to mind as someone who's that sort of posek. If you don't know who Rabbi Rappaport is, you should meet him, because he's probably the smartest man you'll ever meet. But I remember when we were learning Nida in Yeshiva, so Rabbi Tendler gave a chabura to the Kollel guys. We were learning Nida in the Kollel, Maseches Nida in the Kollel. So he gave a chabura to the Kollel guys, and he quoted something that was a very popular sefer, still is a very popular sefer in Hilchos Nida. And the author of the Sefer left something as a Tzarech Iyun. And he said, if you can leave this as a Tzarech Iyun, you should not be writing a Sefer in Hilchos Nida. And what he meant by that was that it was a Tzarech Iyun in the Metzius. And he said, it shouldn't be a Tzarech Iyun in the Metzius. It shouldn't be that you should sit in the Beis Medrash and say that it's a Tzarech Iyun in the Metzius. Be ma'ayin! You don't leave it as a Tzarech Iyun. He was extremely demanding in that way. He was extremely funny also. Like, he had a very, very sharp sense of humor. That's what Rebbetzin Shechter was telling me last night. I drove them to the Shiva house last night. I had the zechus to pick up the Shechters and take them to Muncie last night. So Rebbetzin Shechter was saying that she always knew when there was a Rebbe's meeting in YU, because Rebbetzin Shechter would sit next to Rabbi Tendler and he would tell him all the jokes that Rabbi Tendler would say. That I'm not going to repeat them, but whatever. There were some sharp lines. He's also, from a previous generation. We don't have Rashi Yeshiva from that generation. The oldest active Rosh Yeshiva who's saying Shir now in Yeshiva, I think, is Rav Shechter, right? If I'm not mistaken. Rav Shechter is 80 years old, which, you know, Baruch Hashem, he doesn't seem that way, and he's strong enough. But Rabbi Tendler was Rav Shechter's Rebbe. And when Rav Shechter gave the hesped for Rabbi Tendler, he just kept on referring to him as Rebbe. He said, and you know, when I was in his shir and he had a Hanukkah Masiba, but I was machmir to not eat before lighting candles, so I went home and I missed the Masiba, and I always felt bad that I never that I didn't take advantage of that opportunity to make a connection with my Rebbe, to be together with Rebbe, and you know that's a different generation. These are the Rebbeim of our oldest Rebbeim. There's a poster Rabbi Taubes has in his office of the Rosh Yeshiva of this yeshiva in 1953. The one to die most recently before Rabbi Tendler was like 20 years ago. Meaning the people that were in that poster, he was on that poster with like people where Rav Soloveitchik had a black goatee in the poster. You know what I'm saying? Like this is like this is like from real previous generation. It's really unbelievable that you know he spanned so many generations in yeshiva. Rav Shechter pointed out. He said to Rossi Fried last night. Before he left, that he, you know, the Gemara says that we were zochet to have the Be'er in the Zechus of Miriam, and what is it, the Man in the Zechus of Moshe, and the Ananim in the Zechus of Aaron? Did I get that right? Right, so when each one died, we lost it, but we still had it in the Zechus of, but then when the last of the three died, then we lost all three. So it's Ki'ilu, we lost everything all at once. So Rav Shechter said that was his feeling, that he had all of these Rebbeim in Yeshiva, but there was always Rabbi Tendler, meaning he mentioned this at the Levayan without spelling it out as much, that, you know, he lost Rav Soloveitchik, and he lost Rav Fishman, and he lost all of Rav Gorelick, and all of his Rebbeim, but there was still one. So there was still, but now that he said, I feel that now that I've lost my last Rebbe, that I've lost all of my Rebbeim all at once, to which, you know, Rusi poignantly responded, that she feels that way after losing the second of her two parents, meaning you lose a mother, you still have a father, and then when you lose the father, it's as if you lost a mother and a father both at once. Rabbi Tendler was an extraordinary family man. That was something that was like very striking from the beginning. From the time my brother came into the family, it was first of all like we felt like celebrities, like we were able to be mashadich, you know, with a family like that. We didn't come from like rabbinic, you know. We only became rabbis like in my generation. Like it wasn't so. It was like you know, at my brother's l'chaim. Like Yaakov Tendler read a note of bracha that Rav Meisher wrote to my sister-in-law when on her like second birthday or something, that he wrote on you should be zochet to marry Chashva Talmud Chacham or something like that. You know, a 2-year-old got the bracha that you should be zochet to marry Chashva Talmud Chacham, and you know, like we didn't know what to do with ourselves. Rabbi Tendler, and so one thing that struck us, you know, was that at every simcha everybody spoke, and everybody was great. Like, it's ki'ilu, like they were just passing the mic around the room, and one person was better than the next. At the Levaya, that really stood out, that 8 children, who all, one more articulate than the next, and all B'nai Torah and Talmidei Chachamim, you know, that's a certain amount of success in life, you know, with that. But aside from just his children and grandchildren, whose lives he was extremely involved with and was very, very close with, and great-grandchildren, and you know, my niece is his great-granddaughter. I saw he was Masada Kiddushin at my niece's wedding. When I became a great-uncle, Rabbi Tendler became a great-great-grandfather, you know, with the same, through the same child. But aside from that, Rav Reuven described, and I don't know if anyone knew this story beforehand, I meant to ask the family last night, it was just a little chaotic. Rav Reuven described it. Did you guys hear Rav Reuven's husband? How many of you, but just by show of hands, heard Rav Reuven's husband? Rav Reuven described, so for those who didn't, Rav Reuven described that after Hakamas HaMedina, and maybe the guys who heard it tell me if I heard it incorrectly and I'm just like dreaming things, that after Hakamas HaMedina, Rav Reuven was so taken by what's going on in Eretz Yisrael and that, you know, the Jews have Eretz Yisrael back, that he decided he wanted to move to Israel and become a chicken farmer. What? Rav Reuven said, he said, yeah, I was good with chickens, and, you know, I'd play around with chickens sometimes in the summertime, and he was going to move to Israel and be a chicken farmer. I don't know where Rav Moshe was when Rav Reuven was thinking about becoming a chicken farmer, but it was Rabbi Tendler who talked him out of becoming a chicken farmer. And he said he spoke to me with dignity, with respect. We had a conversation, and he described how maybe I have more to offer Klal Yisrael than being a chicken farmer, which is, I mean, nothing wrong, as Rav Reuven said, nothing wrong with a chicken farmer, you know, wanted to be one, but Rabbi Tendler, you know, gave us Rav Reuven Feinstein, you know, essentially. Which is pretty amazing. He also, Rav Reuven's hesped was just very touching, because it was really just like a brother, you know, just describing like being a kid growing up, with an older brother who was really a mentor, and how we went fishing with him, and he said, I was an idiot kid, I just swung the line and the hook went right into Rabbi Tendler's leg, and like, he said, and he didn't yell at me, and he was so good to me, and you know, like, I mean, that was a little gruesome as he was describing how Rabbi Tendler pushed the hook through the other side, because it's hooked, so you can't pull it out. Like, okay, that was a little much, but it was just very touching to hear, like, people of this generation and giants to just be so human in the way that they describe things. He was also a tremendous mentor. He loved his Talmidim. His kids from the shul, the kids that grew up in the shul were like family, and his Talmidim for decades later stayed in touch with him. His Talmidim would turn to him not only with shailas but with eitzah questions, and absolutely adored him. It was very moving to the family that even last year when Rabbi Tendler was giving classes on Zoom, and it was not easy to understand what he was saying, that people would sit there respectfully with their screens on, and be patient, and whatever, because they appreciated that they were able to connect with someone of this, you know, the, as they kept saying at the Levaya, the Chasna de Beinasiya, the son-in-law of Ramesha, someone from that generation, and someone who's made such a contribution to Klal Yisrael. I remember when I wrote my first Sefer, I was not teaching in our yeshiva, I was teaching in Lander at the time, so there was no like professional connection, it was only just the family connection I had. Rabbi Tendler called me up to tell me he read the whole thing, and to be mechazik me to write more. What does he have to do that? I was, 38 years old, and he's 91 or whatever. Like, he needs to be calling me to give me, but just because he had an opportunity to be mechazik, a younger person. I remember, I could tell you, like, it was so meaningful. I could tell you exactly where I was. I had a Sephardi Talmud that was getting married, and the wedding was called for 4 o'clock, so I showed up at 4:30, and the Chasan and Kala were not there yet. And so I didn't know about Sephardi weddings. So Rabbi Tendler, and I saw my phone, so I actually answered my phone, which is a Chiddush, and it was Rabbi Tendler, and he said, just to be mechazik me, that I should keep on writing, and that I should do more, and it was just, it was so, so meaningful. A couple of points that were not made entirely, but were, you know, but I think are kedai for us to know. Is, first of all, Rav Tendler was a Talmud of Rav Soloveitchik, meaning he was a son-in-law of Rav Moshe Feinstein. And obviously, if you ever heard him speak, everything was the Shver, the Shver, the Shver. Shver said this, Shver said that. But he was a Talmud of Rav Soloveitchik, meaning he really learned from Rav Soloveitchik. He did go to MTJ on Fridays, to even before he was married, to hear Rav Moshe's summation shir. Rav Moshe would give like a summary of all the shirim of the week, and it was like a piece of dibros. You know, if you ever learned the dibros much, that was his Friday shir. That was like the big event. Was his Friday shir, where there were, I don't know, probably two people in the room that understood it. You know, like, you know, adasof. But that was his shir. So Rabbi Tendler used to go to that, and he said that. And if I would recommend listening to his hesped for the Rav when Rav Soloveitchik passed away in yeshiva, they had every night of the shloshim, they had a different speaker. A different Rosh Yeshiva speak about Rav Soloveitchik. So Rabbi Tendler spoke, and he said something that I found so powerful. He spoke about the Meshech Chachma, about Kaf Aleim Har Kidigis, right? That, he said all the Maspidim are saying that Rav Soloveitchik never said Kablu Da'ati. He never said you have to accept my Shita, you have to, you know, he just, you know, he never demanded anyone accept his Shita. So Rabbi Tendler said, that's true. He never said Kablu Da'ati, but let me tell you about Rav Soloveitchik. Meshech Chachma writes about Kaf Aleim Har Kigigis, that it doesn't mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu actually forced us. It meant that the revelation was so great that it was undeniable, that you couldn't possibly say no because of the revelation was so great. Rav Shachter told me that Reb Chaim thought that Meshech Chachma was apikorsis. He said he doesn't understand why, but they have such a tradition that Reb Chaim thought was that Reb Gorelick told him that Reb Chaim thought it was that, because I don't know. But that's what Nesh Chachma said. So Rabbi Tendler said that when you learn to sugi with Rav Soloveitchik, it wasn't that he said kablu da'ati, but you'd have to be an idiot not to. He explained it so clearly that you felt like you were let in on the secret of like of the real understanding of the sugya. Meaning now you were let in on how this is supposed to read. So he didn't have to say kablu da'ati. Of course you're going to be mekabel da'as because you understood. Nobody else understood. And Rabbi Tendler said, sometimes I'd go to Rabbi Shashir and I would say, I'm sorry, that's not pshat. You know, Rav Soloveitchik said not that way, and he would challenge Ramesha. He would challenge and things like that. So that was something that, you know, and he described Rav Soloveitchik also as like, you know, even though everyone views Rav Soloveitchik as like this modern man, it was a very traditional shir. He wasn't discussing philosophy. He never gave a shir on a girsa, you know, in a change in a girsa or something, or you know, an alternate version in the Tosefta or whatever. It was a very traditional brisker shir that he gave, because the Torah is the Torah, and it wasn't the modern ways of thinking. Meaning, and that was interesting that Rabbi Tendler was saying that, because a lot of times you'd attend Rabbi Tendler's shir and you're like, wait, are we in a shir right now, or are we in a biology lecture? You'd attend a biology lecture, you'd be like, are we in a biology lecture, or are we in a shir right now? And that's what Rabbi Berman spoke about, that like he took the vav out of Torah Umada. It was just like, it was just all one. But it's not a stira to what he was admiring about Rav Soloveitchik, because that's like on a metzius issue. If you're going to talk about a metzius, you need to know the metzius ad ha sof. He was passionate about that, and therefore he would spend a lot of time in that, and that was part of the learning process. He had certain famous psakim that were very controversial. He had many very public disagreements with other Rosh Yeshiva in our yeshiva, with Moreno Rav Shechter and Rav Willig and others, but Rav Bleich. But I think sometimes guys get confused about like what's controversial and what's not controversial. But you know, just to know like what his most famous psakim are, probably the biggest one is Brain Death, where Rabbi Tendler held like the Rabbanut in Eretz Yisrael that brain death is death, and huge nafkamina obviously in terms of organ donation and the whole halachic organ donor society. So that was definitely a shita of his. In fact, he made a famous video that he used to love to show with the cutting off of the goat's head and showing how they can keep it hooked up. Meaning, clearly everyone holds that if you decapitate a person, the person is dead, right? So he tried to show that with the machines that they keep people alive on after their brainstem death, you could keep a decapitated goat alive on as well. So it's a little bit of a gruesome video, but he loved it. that was like one of his again, it's a metzius. Let's figure out the metzius. But that was obviously somewhat of a controversial stance. His shita on abortion was strict Rav Meisha, meaning the Tzitz Eliezer didn't exist as a shita in the abortion discussion, which many of our Rosh Yeshiva disagree with, and certainly at least take the Tzitz Eliezer into account, if not paskin like the Tzitz Eliezer on that issue. In fact, Rav Shechter said that they once had like a bioethics hotline or something, or a medical halacha hotline in yeshiva that they set up, and Rav Shechter and Rav Tendler were the operators, I guess. You know, they were the ones that were answering the questions. So depending on which day you call, like, that sounds like crazy. Like depending which day you called, like, you know, so do I pull the puck on grandma? You know, like it was, you get totally different answers. But Rav Shechter said, Rav Tendler held very strongly that when Shailas came in about abortion, not to even mention that it's a machlokas, because it is no machlokas, Rav Meisha said, and that was it. That is somewhat of a controversial stance. People think he had a controversial stance about tuna fish, which he did in the sense that it's against the OU policy, and it's against Rav Shechter in that he did not eat the OU tuna fish. That was an adjustment for our family, that whenever my sister-in-law would come over, we'd have to buy the Dagim brand tuna fish. But he's not the only one that holds that way. Meaning Rabbi Belsky held that way, even though he was one of the postkin for the OU. Rabbi Reisman holds that way. There are other people that hold that way as well. He very famously went on Har HaBayis at every opportunity. People assume that that's controversial as well. Not as controversial as you think. I mean, obviously, our Rebbeim generally don't do that, but not because they think that it's halakhically problematic. I asked Rav Schachter about it once, and he said, no, it's mutter, I just don't think it's my psak to give, meaning I think it's the poskim in Eretz Yisrael have the right to paskin it, and the gedolim in Eretz Yisrael said that we shouldn't do it, so we don't. But really, technically, I think Rav Schachter believes that it is mutter to go on Har HaBayis. He just doesn't think we should. He just doesn't think he's authorized to give that psak. Rabbi Tanner shtick, one of his shticks, was that at a chasana, the ashes that he would put on Rosh Chasanim was from leaves that he would rip off of trees on Har HaBayis. He would burn the leaves and make the ashes and put it on the heads of Chasanim, and he would announce it. He would say, this is a partial kiyum mitzvah of removing an eitzel mizbech Hashem, that I removed a piece of an eitz from Har HaBayis. I mean, mekayim that mitzvah, and with that mitzvah I burn the ashes, and I now now put it on the as a zeched, obviously a zecher l'chorban, he would use it on Rosh Chasanim. And he was also one of the earliest supporters of the Murex Trunculus Tcheles. That was like right up his alley in terms of the understanding the chemistry and understanding the archaeology and who do you show that to? How do you bring that raya? So they showed it in the early days. It was Rabbi Dr. Lamb, it was Rabbi Tendler, and it was Rabbi Schachter were the ones that were the early adopters of the Tcheles. But one thing that I think for us as current and future Rebbeim and Magidei Shir, that's very important, is that Rabbi Tendler was always prepared. He was a consummate teacher. He was never off the cuff. It was never on the fly. Everything was thought out. Everything was organized. He was an extremely, extremely prepared Magid Shir, speaker, lecturer. He described how Rav Moshe, when he gave that summation shiur on Friday, would be up all Thursday night writing out word for word of the shiur, and then when Rav Moshe would say the shiur, he would take out his notes and he would just read like this straight from his notes the whole shiur word for word, because Chas V'Shalom, he didn't want to mess up a single word. And you could see when he described that, the admiration in doing that. Rabbi Tendler didn't exactly do that, but the admiration in doing that to make sure that you have it just right, and to want to make sure that you're prepared and that you don't make any mistakes in the preparation. So we lost someone of a giant stature, someone who was a Rebbe in our yeshiva for over 7 decades. I mean, it's just close to 7 decades. I don't know exactly, but so that which is obviously more than a lifetime for many, and which had a tremendous impact on the American Jewish community and worldwide Jewish community. And when it used to be, when the yeshiva had any issue, the New York Times would call up and they want to know what the Jewish view is on whatever. The president's office would always just give Rabbi Tendler's phone number, and that's how because we knew we always had someone who was articulate and who was knowledgeable enough. Oh, and I should have mentioned also, in his early career, like, the main thing he was fighting against was conservative Judaism. Like, we're in such a different world from where he was when he started. And that's why, like, if you ever heard him talk about conservative Judaism, it was such a brand, it was such a fire, because that's what, when he started out, that's what they were fighting. When he started Orthodox Shul and Great Neck, they were fighting the rise of the conservative movement, the taking down the mechitzas throughout the country. That's the world that he uniquely, someone of them must be to mention this, he uniquely was capable of addressing, because getting an old European rabbi who can't speak English to try to make the case to American Jews as to why Orthodoxy is the right way to go, it wasn't resonating with people. And here you have this young person, American, you know, he used to say he grew up in a small European town called the Lower East Side of Manhattan, really American, born and raised, and able to articulate in it with a PhD, and maybe, so it was he played a pivotal role in that as well. So obviously we should seek inspiration from all of our Rebbeim, and we should appreciate what was lost with the loss of Rav Moshe David Tendler, Zecher Tzadik L'Varcha. Okay.